Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. Ching, ching, bling, bling. Got to chatter. You ain't talking money, then you're talking no matter. Ching, ching, bling, bling. Patting pockets. We take the dollar, dollar.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Backdoor Cover, IB Sports Weekly Gambling Podcast. This week, well, actually, I guess I should introduce us. First, I am your host, Chief Keith Fleming. I don't know if you listen to the wrestling podcast, Alan. That's where I got the chief. Yeah, Chief
Keith.
Oh, my
God.
Roman Reigns, you know. and my man, Alan, a.k.a. Actively Lazy, a.k.a. the Betting Guru. What's going on, man?
Nothing, man. I've had better days, but just, you know, burning money for March Madness.
Well, we all know that that's when you catch fire.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. You gotta take your lumps in February. Oh, no, I know that. Because these conference games, Hey, but I will say, look, so I went to VCU, and I've been an avid VCU fan to the point where I, like, know the refs and everything. Like, I've been following them nonstop, hardcore, since 2003, right? Today was the most blatant, like, inside job I've ever seen a ref do, man. Like, I have VCU to cover 3.5. It was a tie game, and the point guard just rushed the shot, took a layup, and missed. And when I tell you the whistle was late, the other team had crossed half court on the fast break, and the whistle blew. It was
as late as that flag for the Bucks.
It was so blatant. I was like, oh, my God. And it was funny because the first thing I thought was, this is why I like golf, because there's no cheating of that nature.
That's why people need to mind their own fucking business when they call in. I can't stand that. Like,
nobody's complaining about the ball cheating.
Exactly. Real quickly, just to go over last week, I am an idiot. Once again, something that we've established on here. I give Max Homa as a top 5 and a top 10. Both hit 10-1, 6-1. That's really good. I didn't give him to win. Like, how many times do you have to explain this to me that if you like somebody that much that you think they're probably going top 10 and top 5 and they got 70-1 odds, like, maybe throw a little something on them to win. Congrats to my brother-in-law. Listened to the podcast. He heard what you said about Homa. Obviously, I had him in the top 10 and top 5. He not only took Homa to win, he had Finau to top 5. So he was really nervous in that playoff because he did not have Homa to top 5 and he did not have Finau to win. And, I mean, he was just a ball of nerves. But congrats to him on a very good weekend, and I'm glad that the podcast helped him come to that. This weekend, we are moving on to the WGC. This is normally the Mexico event, which is a really fun event, a fun track. But it is at Concession in Florida due to COVID and everything going on. So, I mean, it's going to be the wild, wild west this weekend. It's a 72-player field, the top 50 in the world, plus some special exemptions, a no-cut event. They've never hosted a PGA Tour event at this venue. It did host the 2015 Men's NCAA National Championship, which Bryson DeChambeau won at 8-under. It is a par 72 that is 174 yards, that is long, with just an unreal 155 slope and rating of 77.6. And just to explain to anybody that does not know what slope and rating is, the higher the slope, the more difficult the course. Like most courses, at the most, are going to have like 136, 138, 140. So obviously 155 is really high. The rating, though, of 77.6 means that, like, I'm a good golfer. I've been playing my entire life. I'm what you call a scratch golfer. Not saying I go play with even the guys on the mini tours, but I mean, I can play the game. Par for me from the tees that the boys are playing this week is 77.6. So if I shot 77, I would technically have shot an under or home par at this golf course from the tees they're playing. It's tough. It's a Tony Jacklin, Jack Nicklaus co-design. Established in 2006, Paul Azinger, a commentator for NBC, the lead commentator, He's a member of this club. He had some things to say about it. He said he's probably a combined 600 over par in the times he's played the course since he's became a member. He reiterated that he was not kidding. That probably really is the number. Called it a great test. Said the greats will be tested. But if the wind doesn't blow, he expects low scores. He said it's absolutely a second shot golf course. And the most difficult part is without a doubt the undulation in the green. So you would think a course that's almost 7,500 yards, long hitters, you know, the length. I think you really got to look at guys that are really good iron players and like really look and don't overlook at the guys that are good putters and even more importantly are great at scrambling around the greens, because undulated greens are difficult to putt on, but what they're really difficult to do is chip, because if you're not one of those guys that just has all the shots, you can hit the bump, you can hit the flop, you can hit every different kind of shot. Undulated greens, depending on, you know, the angle that you got to the flag, can be, you know, next to impossible. I didn't really find a really great course that compares, but I think Muirfield Village, another Jack track, you know, for the Memorial is probably the closest thing that I could find. But I just kept hearing over and over again, this is just bigger, and it's just a big venue. It's kind of wide open. It's obviously long. It's got some funky par fives that I don't think we're going to be seeing a lot of eagles, even the longs hitters. There's like either you got to lay up on the tee shot or on the approach shot. Let's just start with how excited are you about an event that at a course, I mean, I think there's four guys in the field that have played a competitive round, and they were all in that 2015 NCAA championship.
This is exactly what I needed on a week where I'm more focused on college basketball, is a course that basically nobody knows anything about. Exactly. You know, my usual like course preview article usually takes me about 20-25 minutes to go through.
Yeah,
it took two. It took two today. So I mean, that's cool. I will say, just based off of like the details that I saw, I saw the yardage, but I just thought because there's water hazards on 12 holes, I want to avoid people that I think are going to give shots back. I mean, the course sounds difficult. Usually on Bermuda grass greens and things like that, the putting isn't too hard. But in general, this sounds like it can be, it will be challenging. And I mean, it's Florida. When is the wind not blowing down there?
Well, I'm
anticipating the worst case scenario. And because of that, I was focusing more on people who I consider to be intelligent golfers who rely more on on navigating courses rather than overpowering courses and being creative. And just a promise that for me, strokes gained using less than driver for a lot of people. Obviously, you know, I've said this in podcast past, my default when I don't know anything about a course is pick a ball striker, especially if there's wind in play. Just go heavy on the idea that these guys are going to be able to control their shots, and that gives them the ultimate advantage when weather's in play and with this course being pretty much anybody's game.
And if you're just getting into golf and say for whatever reason you don't know how to research the stats and stuff correctly, just a little, you know, kind of tidbit, guys that are from Texas, guys that are from Australia, and guys that play on the European tour typically are ball strikers because they play in such difficult conditions where there's always a lot of wind, a lot of like kind of link style courses. Those are some good names to look at. South Africans as well, actually. Is it fair too to say this week that with nobody really knowing, you know, what kind of player is going to succeed here, if you want to go on recent form, if you want to, you know, stick to guys that are great scramblers, if you want to stick to, as you're saying, intelligent golfers, like it's kind of, you know, you can pick whatever you want. I'm personally with the winner picks and the prop picks, trying to do a little bit of guys that I think really will have success here, but then also looking at guys that I think their odds are messed up and trying to, you know, take some value plays.
Yeah, so the site that I use, numberball.com, for his tournament angles, he has Bermuda grass greens, strong field events, and hard courses. I was thinking just strong field events and hard courses in general. So basically, I look at the when I have that combination of a strong field and a hard course, I look at it from the scope of how I would look at a major, because that's essentially what a major is. It's the strongest of fields, and yep, the courses are challenging. So you want to kind of go at guys who you think have that pedigree that they can overcome not only the pressure that comes with taking the lead or being in the lead, but also overcome the challenges that a course like this will present. And one thing about hard courses is not there are times when we do podcasts where you hear me or even you sometimes we'll talk about guys that can score. When you're doing a hard course, you're really looking for guys who don't give shots back, because they're is it Snediger? I think it's Snediger who takes leads in smaller tournaments, and I always complain because he doesn't score enough, mm-hmm, like in the final round to win. He shoots like an even par. And I've said on podcasts before, and I complain about it to this day, shooting even par 99.9% of the time in the final round will get you a loss. I don't care who you are, how many strokes you're up. I mean, you better be up like video game.
You need to
like
shoot about 68.5,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, especially if you're in the lead. To score at least something. But
especially the guys behind you, they're gonna be going, trying to go low. And there's so much talent on tour. If they're within 5-6 shots, they shoot 65, 64. And, I mean, to your point, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So when you face a truly hard course, take that logic, throw it out the window, because it doesn't matter. You just don't want to give shots back. Prime example of that last year, Sung J-M, when he won, that course was playing so hard that day. And I think he might have been like two over taking the back nine, and he was still barely clinging to a lead. And that's because he'd only given back two, but the guys behind him had been like four. Some people were hitting the water. Some people were like just smacking it all over the place. So you just want to find somebody that's not going to beat themselves this week. If you have to pick your favorite golfer, that favorite golfer needs to have that attribute where you can depend on him not to beat himself when the going gets tough.
So let's start with some of the favorites. Another just really interesting thing is I check several different sites for odds. I try to do that always. DraftKings, I can't wait for them to get the sports book here when Georgia allows it, because I mean, some of their odds are just crazy. Like, you can get DJ for a whole other 6-1. Like, it's funny that guys like Bryson and Finau are lower, but then you have a guy like JT who's actually higher than what I've seen. It's just interesting how their numbers, and I'm sure FanDuel is probably similar, are different than a lot of the actual sports books. And it may just be their odds makers, like, who knows, but
FanDuel is ridiculous.
Yeah, they really are. DJ, big favorite, world shocker, 5-1. You can get him 6-1 in some places. He's obviously the world number one. His last six starts, 8 first, 11th first, 2nd, 6, 4 wins since June. In that span, he's also got 3 runner-ups, 4 additional top 12s. He has 6 World Golf Championship victories, including 3 at this event. And I know you're saying, well, wait a minute, this is a different course. That is true, but he's already won in his 3 victories here at 2 different venues, both at Doral and in the course in the WGC Mexico. So take that as you will. You got John Rahm, second betting favorite, 10-1. Probably my favorite play here this week. His world ranked 2nd. His last 6 starts, 5th, 13th, 7th, 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 2nd. He's finished inside the top 7 in 6 of his last 7. This season, he's 4th in strokes gained, and 4th in strokes gained off the tee, and then 2nd in tee to green strokes gained. I mean, he is just a monster. I think this course is going to set up very well for him. Our boy Xander, who luckily has that W, or he would be getting a lot of the Finau talk right now. He is 14-1. His last six starts, 15th, 2nd, 2nd, 5th, 17th, 17th. Unbelievable stat, though. 16 straight top 25s in 26 of his last 28 events. I mean, we were talking about, you know, Rory top 10. Even at the odds, whatever they are, it almost would make sense, you know, just to bet him to top 25 every single week. Rory's 14-1. His last six, he missed the cut, then 13th, 16th, 3rd, 5th, and 7th. I will go ahead and tell you, I've read that both Rory and Bryson have a pretty good history after a missed cut of coming back. And I don't remember if it was a top 10 or a top 5, but it was like both of them, I think, were four out of the last five times they've missed a cut. They came back and had either a top 10 or top 5, so they usually rebound well. Cantlay and JT are both at 18-1. Cantlay has been just so steady. His last six, 15th, 3rd, 2nd, 13th, 17th, 1st. He's a guy that this course should fit very well. Remember, he won at Memorial. That's Muirfield, a course that I think is a comp. And then JT, he's got four straight top 10s in WGC's events, but uncharacteristic for him. He's gone miscut, 13th, miscut, 3rd, 12th, 4th. If you had to pick any of those guys, I'll go ahead and tell you, Rahm would be my favorite, then Cantlay would be my second favorite. Who's your favorite out of that group?
I guess this is where I get my disclaimer. Like, we're talking, it's golf, man. You can't take guys 6-1 to outright win.
I completely. Field,
yep. It's just, you just
we said that last week. So, yeah, I should have made the disclaimer again. The odds are not good enough to do it.
I used to say that about Rory. When Rory was on his little run, he was as low as 8-1. When Brooks was the major killer, he was coming into some tournaments,
especially the majors.
Six to one, 7-1. At those odds, man, you just play the top five prop. Yep. It's virtually the same, just with some wiggle room.
Right.
Out of this list, I actually have Cantlay at the top of my list on this one for this course. Historically plays well on the West Coast, but one thing about his East Coast swing is his steady play around the greens, and I think that's going to come into play a lot. Also, he's not afraid to club down. He doesn't have that kind of pride that you see with some people like Rory or Xander or hell, even
Cameron Rump. Smith last week trying just, to say just Tony Finau. Like, what an idiot.
JT has that in him too sometimes. Like, I will say that about Cantlay's game that I've noticed over the years is he doesn't have that kind of pride that you see in other guys. And he's constantly like he's like a version of Bryson where he's constantly thinking, talking to himself, trying to figure things out. But you can tell like he's always in the moment. And that's what I like about him. I think I've said that about him before. I want to say I had him last year when he won too, and I think we both did. So I'm glad that you think this course fits that kind of style, because I had him the first name on my list for my tier one this week. Obviously I'm a big Xander guy, but again, man, it's the approach shots are still just not hitting yet. And I will say Rahm, Xander, JT, and Rory are people who I'm still watching, especially Xander, obviously, because he's my guy. But I'm watching them very closely because the value is very high on them. If we can just – it's like a spark. If you could just get that little spark to catch, then you might get some real good value on them at a major if you can catch them as they're trending back up. Because right now, Rory's just all over the place, man. He really is. And it's not – it's not one of those things where you could say he's tinkering with something. It's just he's just not producing that magic around the greens that we're used to seeing.
Well, this has happened to a lot of great players when they had a kid.
Yeah,
he had a kid recently, and that is a real effect. It's happened to Tiger, it happened to Jack.
I'm a average Joe and it ruined me. So yeah, I completely understand. And I think he plays better on the East Coast than he does out West. So if not this event, maybe later on. I do know DJ has great WGC pedigree. I want to say Rom does too, and Xander and Cantley. So, like, everybody that you named in those six guys, they've all got the background for a WGC event. So you can't necessarily go wrong by picking anybody out of that six. But I just think, to me, Cantley stands out this week.
And I will say, again, Rom is so close that I can't obviously guarantee he's going to win this week. I do think 10-1 is pretty good odds for a guy that's playing the way he is. And I think this course is just tailor-made for him because he can bully courses, but he's accurate. He's got a kind of a sneaky good short game. If Rom doesn't win this event, I do think, though, that Rom, by Augusta, is going to win an event. Like, I feel like he's that close that by the time that we get Sunday and, you know, whoever wins the green jacket, Rom will have won from now to then, which is only basically a month and a half away. I just think he's that close and playing that well. Because, I mean, again, when you're fourth in strokes gained off the tee and or total strokes gained, fourth in strokes gained off the tee, second in strokes from tee to green, I mean, that's some serious ball striking. He's got some crazy power. I love the guys in the 20 section, and I know you'll love some of these. Our boy, Tyrrell Hatton, 20-1, his last six, 22nd, first, 8th, 23rd in the missed cut. He's got three top 10s in this event. Again, I know this is not the same venue, but it's WGC. To have good finishes, it's a strong field. It just shows that you play well in these type events. He's proved he can win in tough PGA events. We know he's won at Arnie's course. He's won at the Honda. He's got four straight top 22 finishes on the European Tour, including a WGC-type event at the Abu Dhabi earlier this year. Our poor, sad man, Tony Finau, is also at 20-1. I mean, just like when he got that up and down on 18 and went into playoff, I was like, he's finally going to get the victory, and then he still didn't. His last six, three straight seconds, a fourth, a 31st, an eighth. I don't know what else to say to him at this point. He is a great play on DraftKings. He's playing, like, unquestionably the best golf of his career, but it's just like, I don't know, it's almost like a curse. Bryson is also at 20-1. He's coming off a missed cut. Before that, 18th, 7th, 34th, 8th, and 1st. He won here, remember, when it was a national championship hosted in 2015. Victor Hovland is at 22-1, another guy that just this course seems absolutely made for. He is top 15 in 6 of 7. His last 6, 5th, 6th, 2nd, 31st, 3rd, and 1st. I mean, you think about that. That is the top 6 in 5 of his last 6. So, I mean, you're going to talk about top 15, 6 of 7. That's actually top 6 and 5 out of the last 6. And then Webb Simpson, who's been kind of a guy that's, I think, under the radar coming into this, 22-1, top 20 in 6 of 8, plays tough courses really well. I love Webb Simpson this week. And then Koepka, 28-1, he struggled. He had the three straight missed cuts, but he's rebounded well since then. He's finished, you know, he obviously had the win at Phoenix, had 38th last week. That was kind of a unfair position for the way he played. He had one bad round on Saturday where he made a couple of big numbers, but he had 5 birdies in all 4 rounds. So he played well enough at the Genesis to be in that. We talked about how nobody really makes a ton of birdies out there. He did. He just unfortunately made a bunch of bogeys. He has 5 top 6 finishes in WGCs, including his win 2 years ago and back-to-back runner-ups in the 2 most recent WGCs that have occurred. So am I crazy to, I mean, I don't think you can bet Finau right now. As great as he's playing, I'd bet him top 5. I'd bet him in DraftKings, but I wouldn't bet him. But the rest of those guys, I don't hate any of them.
You couldn't pay me to bet Tony Finau right now. It could be Tony Finau versus Tony Finau.
And I'll take a pass.
Yeah, I'll take a pass, man. And it's I'm not being critical in the sense there is like I can say, oh, I can do that. No, not at all, you know. And I think sometimes when we as average Joes are critical of people, the fans sometimes take it the wrong way. I'm basing this off of the class that he plays in. Like, Tony needs to win at this point. He's got to win. I know golf checks are very good because he's the happiest loser I've ever seen.
He's living a very good life. He's getting six-figure checks every week.
Yeah, leave it. I was rooting for him last week. I really was. Even though, we had hyped up Homa a little. I was rooting for him just because he's such a great guy. But he's consistent. He's definitely a DraftKings play and a prop play that I will consistently support that. But an outright winner, I'll pass.
It's crazy, right, that his odds to win continue to go down. Yeah. Even though it just continues to be in position and then not get it done. And it's almost like it's just, I hate to say it, it's kind of a sucker's bet right now.
Yeah. And I think that's where they're also afraid. He must get bet a lot.
I'm sure he probably is. He's probably one of the more popular guys on here.
Yeah, that would be the only way I can see it being justified still at those odds, because they just don't want to get burned in the event that he does win. Yeah.
It was like Gronk that first Super Bowl touchdown. They got killed on that.
Yeah. So if you like John Rahm, I've said this before, Hatton is basically Rahm Light. I mean, they're the same player mentally. Yep. Mm-hmm. And they actually have similar game. Hatton did great on the East Coast Swing last year. And
Hatton's a beast, man. Yeah, he's top five in the world. People forget that he is top five in the world, and you're getting him at the ninth, tenth best odds. I mean, it's crazy.
Funny story. Before I even knew who he was, I bet Tyrrell Hatton because I thought he was kin to Ricky Hatton because I'm a big hockey fan, and I didn't even watch European golf. I just saw there was a Hatton, and I would just put I kid you not, I would put $10 on him every single tournament just because he was a Hatton and there was a name that I recognized. And he actually won. There were times where he would win or place and I had put a bet on him and forgotten about it because I was so focused on PGA. And when he came over to PGA, obviously I would throw money on him because I'm like, yeah, I know this guy.
I know this dude.
And he actually helped me expand to the European circuit a little bit, or at least made me start paying more attention to it, even if I didn't edit, but just to kind of know who's coming over.
You can get such good odds early when a guy first comes over from the European Tour. And there's a couple of guys in this field that I know we're going to get to that are prime examples of that.
Yeah, so I like his game. Sometimes when I want to pick Rahm, if I think Rahm's priced too low, I'd take Hatton. Just because, like I said, they're very similar. I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the mix. If not this tournament, the more East Coast tournaments that he gets, I think he'll definitely be in play. Victor Hovland is second on my list at these odds. I liked him the most out of the young three that came in a couple years ago. Hovland, Wolf, and Morikawa. Hovland was my favorite of them. He was. Sadly, the one that still has – I don't think he still doesn't have a win, does he? Or does he have one?
Who was it? I'm sorry.
Hovland.
He has a win. He won about 4 or 5 events ago.
He was the last one to win, though, I think. I think Wolf got the first.
Actually, I think he has two now, I believe. Because he won, I think, at the very end of last year in one of the smaller events. And then I think he won a full event at the very beginning of this season.
Okay. Because I was going to say, I remember – wanting him to win. He was always in the mix, but he couldn't get it done. I like him on this course. I think it fits his style. One thing about Hovland I've noticed too, difficult courses don't seem to faze him.
He plays great on difficult. Yeah, look at his major record.
He can still score with the best of them, and he's got the type of game that he can save par a lot of times.
Very good. Underrated scrambler and a great, great proximity to the hole guy.
So, sadly, Webb Simpson was the top of my list. And
I love Webb this week, man.
So, you know how it goes with me and Webb. Every time I pick Webb Simpson, he doesn't win. But he literally checked. So, there were three things off the top of my head that I wanted to look at before I even, started capping. Was, driver accuracy, approach shots, the less than driver stats, and he checks all three. I got a little list here, and he's got three check marks. He's the only one with three check marks, so he's fitting all the top in those categories that I was looking for. So
very similar game to Cantley, right?
Yeah, 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 and so he's definitely there. I'm gonna stick with that, but I can't help myself. Every time there's Florida and there's a difficult course, I have to give a look at Brooks.
Oh yeah, I mean,
it's kind of what he does. And he's one of the few people on tour who has openly praised and got giddy over hard courses. Like, he hates when people are 25 under. Like, he's the guy that likes the six.
It seems
under.
Like he treats the WGCs too like a mini major, because his record in WGCs are much better than other non-major PGA Tour events.
Yeah, and he has been playing well. I think he's turning the corner a little, getting more comfortable, feeling more loose out there. So, you know, you said you like a lot of the people at these odds. I agree. I think this is the area where you kind of want to put some focus on, because if we're on my screen on my bookie, Webb Simpson's at 30-1. You got Daniel Berger at 30-1, who's got good Florida roots.
Patrick Reed.
Yeah, 30-1, who's got good roots on windy courses, difficult courses, things like that. So, like,
best scrambler in the world.
Yeah. So those three, just at 30-1, Webb, Berger, Reed, you could definitely make a case for picking any of those three. You could make a case for Brooks at 28-1, and you could definitely make a case for Hatton and Hovland at their price range. Bryson, I'm going to stay away from Bryson just because I don't like his accuracy in general. Just with the drive, with any club in his hand, I don't think he's putting the ball where he wants to put it, and that bothers me. And because of that, I want to stay away from him, because there's 12 water hazards at this particular course, and I don't want anybody like that I can't trust where the ball's going. So Brooks might actually fit that bill too, because he's been a little erratic himself, but I know there's more history, at least on my end, in my mind, there's a more positive history with Brooks. Florida is his roots, man. He went to Florida State. Same with Berger. He went to Florida State. Like, the bent grass, that's what they're comfortable with. The conditions out there will not faze them whatsoever. So I'm more comfortable with sticking with the idea that Brooks could be over DeChambeau. So one
thing, I do just want to convince you one thing, though, on DeChambeau.
Yeah.
It's got to be – he is somebody that confidence is a big part of his game, obviously, because we know he's such a tinkerer, takes a scientific approach. You can't tell me he's not going to feel very confident going to a golf course that he's one of only four guys that have truly seen it under pressure, and he won and won easily in the National Championship. I think he won by like 4 or 5 shots. I just think he's going to be feeling himself coming into this week. And I was actually kind of surprised that his odds were where they're at. I mean, we're only 6 events away from his last win.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But I just don't think he's the same golfer physically that he was in 2015, obviously, with the added muscle. And I think his game has changed since. His game's changed over the last, 3 years that I've seen him play.
Right.
Like, he does, like, mentally with his approach, he's the same golfer, but he puts more emphasis on the power game, and I think that's going to hurt him here, because he's got the power, but he doesn't have the control of his swings right now, and that's going to hurt.
He's also though a guy that he's not going to be like, if there's a chance that he can go into the water by hitting draw, like, he's going to. Yes, he's going to take aggressive lines with whatever club he's hitting off the tee, but I don't see him like – I mean, he's not an idiot. He's not just going to be, you know, bringing the water into play, I think, consistently. But, I mean, I do understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not an idiot, but he has done idiotic things.
Oh, yeah. Well, anybody that's played the game of golf has done plenty of idiotic things. Yeah. It's a game that you'll do some stupid stuff. You mentioned Reed and Berger, who I both love at their odds as well. You also got Neiman at 35, M at 40. How about Morikawa? He's all the way down to like 45-1. Scheffler's 45-1. Harris English and Tommy Fleetwood 55-1. Hideki at 60-1. That was the one that really jumped out to me. Because if this course with the undulated greens and stuff, and it's a ball strikers event, I mean, Hideki should jump to the top of that list.
You're higher on Hideki than I am, and that's just because he's putter. Like, I've seen Hideki, man. Hideki could get within 6 feet.
But I'm also a Louis and Adam Scott guy who are basically the same.
My man Hideki could get within 6 feet for birdie and somehow
even it's gonna be a ride.
you can't figure it out, man. But I mean, he's definitely at these are the highest odds I've seen him at in a while. Out of that group, Morikawa stands out because we're talking about less than driver. I'm talking about ball striking and approach shots, things like that. That's all things that you would use to describe his game. He changed his putting technique. I think they were talking about it last week or something like that. So he's been tinkering. I would say proceed with caution with that, just because we just don't want to, like, while he's still trying to figure things out, we don't want to put too much investment in that. But for some reason, if you watched him play last week and you feel like you think he's turning the corner on it, this is a course that I think he should do well on. Sungjae Im, you know, we love Sungjae. If it's going
to
be.
I think this field's a little too big for him, don't you?
At 35,
I like him. I like him for top 10, top 5. But
I will say this.
He's 8-1 to top 5 and plus 335 to top 10. Those are the bets I like with him.
Yeah, with the idea that the wind will be in play, I do kind of like him in these kind of conditions. I had to check the weather. Like, Sungjae would be a hedge based on the weather, because we played him last year on probably the windiest, most ridiculous course of all time.
Right.
and it worked out well. And I can't forget that, because he really looked really good then.
Field wasn't quite as strong though. That's the only thing.
It wasn't, but we're not quite out of the 2020 logic that anything DJ's law, basically. We're not quite out of that. So we're close, but.
So a few more names I want to get to, and then just a few long shots. Because, I mean, these odds are just, it's crazy this week. Oh, Jason wait. Day, 65-1. Fitzpatrick. Go ahead. Yeah.
I just want to say Neiman is a must play. He's a must play. Yeah. At 55, he's a must play. Go ahead.
No, I 100% co-sign on that. Jason Day is a guy that you laugh, but again, I think scrambling putting is going to be huge this week. Day plays well on wind. I would not ignore him at 65-1. Fitzpatrick, Scott are also 65-1. And then the other guy I just real quickly want to mention, Justin Rose, 70-1.
Oh, man. Do we curse on this one? Because I feel like
I curse every week.
Man,
yeah.
Fuck Justin Rose, man. I played that punk. He fits every single course. I can't stand it. Justin Rose.
Tailor-made Rose course.
If you pulled
up
the stats, you can't find a course on tour where Justin Rose would not.
But doesn't that make sense then? If he's 70-1, why not take a chance?
But you will not find a course where he doesn't fit, and yet he doesn't win. The last year,
70-1.
Since COVID,
he's 11-1 to top 5. Then how about that? 11-1 to top 5. You like that?
So frustrating. He's been so frustrating, but he's, like I said, he literally fits every course, like all the time. It got so bad I had to like write a note before I started doing my research not to pick Justin Rose. Yeah, because he's there all the time.
11-1 to top 5 though. You like that, right? I understand the.
I don't, man. I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, but just because I don't, it probably will hit. But I don't like it.
I mean, and you need it. We talked about this last week. You really have to look at the props. I mean, it's unbelievable the props on some of these guys. Like a guy like Billy Horseshoe, another guy from the area, played golf at Florida, plays really well on Bermuda greens. Great putter, great scrambler. He's fucking 100-1 to win the tournament, 16-1 to top 5, 6-1 to top 10. I mean, there is some unbelievable props out there. Kisner, who he's going to be one of my top 5 plays, 14-1 to top five. Kisner is a guy that in these big fields, he doesn't necessarily win, but he's there. And he has a chance, and he's just so steady, and especially if the wind blows. I mean, I think he's got a great chance to top five, a lot better than 14-1 odds. Real quick.
Wait. Did you look up the Jason Day prop for a withdrawal?
Nah.
Oh, you should have looked that up, man. I'm sure it's there because it's bound to happen.
Oh, come on, man. You're such an ass. Long shots. I want to just give you a few guys that I wrote down to pay attention to. Mark Leishman, 100-1. Of course, it fits well for him. I think he's one of the most undervalued guys on the board and for DraftKings. He's done well in big events. Shane Lowry, 125-1. Again, a guy that plays well in WGCs. He plays well in majors. Brandon Todd at 150-1 is my favorite long shot, like by a mile. This dude is the best putter on tour and the straightest driver on tour. So, I mean, I think this course is going to set up well for him. And then my man Lee Westwood, and I'm not talking about to win. I mean, if you want to throw some money on him at 201, why not? But top 10 and top five, Westwood is a guy that consistently shows up in these events on difficult golf courses and plays really well. And Westwood is 28-1 to top five and 11-1 to top 10. You definitely need to look at those. Who do you have for some of your long shots?
You want to talk about disrespect. My man, Gary Woodland, is 140-1.
Isn't that crazy? I meant to ask you about it. I know he's been playing bad, but I mean, this guy won a major a year ago and definitely has the game for this kind of place. Because, I mean, he could probably hit 2-iron around this track.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I have to take a look at it, man. At 140,
you can get him for 200-1 on DraftKings.
Yeah.
200-1.
I got to take a look at that. Let's see. That stood out to me. I like Kevin Na at 100-1. Primarily, if he's on with that putter, he can do amazing things. And again, talking about a potential situation where we're not trying to give shots back, I will, you know, I said it last week, like we might overemphasize putting. Depending on the conditions this weekend, at this
point, I don't think you can overemphasize.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might want to.
I really don't. On a course that nobody knows, like, it's going to be huge. Scrambling and putting, I'm telling you, I think is going to be a really big factor for top five and top 10 and potentially the winner.
Brendan Todd at 160-1.
I love it.
Yeah, I kind of like him as well. And then,
I mean, again, he's 18-1 to top five and 8-1 to top 10. Like, it's insane. This field is just, it's awesome. It keeps on going. I know you like your boy, cause we talked about Van Ruin.
Yes. Eric Van Ruin. I do believe he's South African.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm. And he's, I like him, man. At 200-1, I think it's just more or less cause He came in the event that we played last year where Patrick Reed won. He came in and it was a combination of bent grass and Poana, which I obviously hate Poana, but the combination I think kind of showed, you know, how he can play, and it was primarily the bent grass that he was really successful on. And this is a bent grass course, so I think there's an angle there, and I'm gonna look at him as a top 20 prop, which obviously would be probably the longest of long shots at 200-1 to win. He's probably she's probably like 13-1 as a top 20, but I kind of like that. And those are my long shots.
Lance, I really Griffin, like Thomas Dietrich too, is another guy that I really like. He's been playing great on European tour. He's a ball striker. A young kid and just got big time upside. I'm not saying you pick him to win, but again, he's another guy that he's like 14-1 to top 20 on DraftKings, 33-1 to top five. He has the kind of game where I could see him top five, and or you can probably get him 7-1 to top 10, which in this field, the top 20s are going to be like, I mean, the odds are good on a lot of areas, especially top five, top 10, and win. The top 20s, man, it's hard to find a guy that's more than 5-6-1.
Yeah, I agree. So those long shots are definitely guys that I'm going to be looking at for props. Billy Horschel.
I'm telling you, I love Billy.
He's Billy, a Florida Billy, boy, Billy.
Plays well.
I know. I was gonna say, man, it's a Florida. So Billy, I play Billy on everything North Carolina and south of that. I mean, it's typically where he excels at. So definitely give him a look. And unfortunately, this isn't in Mexico, because if it was, Ortiz and Answer would probably be on my list as well. But definitely want to give Billy Horschel a strong look again with the angle of just being comfortable in this state and on courses in this state. And so if we're talking about these long shots, if you want to play all the long shots, put $5 on them or something like that, that's great. But these are the guys that you're going to want to really check out for DraftKings, because they're going to be the small percentage people. And I think you had said, was it Keegan last week was what, like 1%, you said?
Yeah, 1%.
And he was a long shot that I kind of just thrown out there just because it's somebody that you routinely talk about and you like the golfer. And I just, you know, mentioned it in passing, but you thought about it and put him in your lineup and he scored pretty well. So if you're looking to mix those lineups up, these are the guys that you really want to take a look at. Now, Brendan Todd is a popular person that people usually like to play as a long shot, so you're probably not going to get much on him. But like Billy Horschel and Eric Van Rooyen, these two guys who have that kind of like course fit angle, like those are the guys that you really want to try to take a strong look at.
I completely agree. Real quick, because while we're there, I'm going to go over the DraftKings tiers. I do four tiers. I give you four players. The first one is 11,691. Real quickly, I got Rahm at 11,100, Bryson at 9,900. Finau, again, don't pick him to win, 9,800 on DraftKings. He's just a birdie machine right now. And then Patrick Reed, 9,200. I think Reed will definitely make the cut. I really like the 9,000 to 8,100 range. It's tier two. I got Fleetwood, 8,900. M 8,800, Scheffler 8,300, and Adam Scott 8,200. Tier 3, 8,7100. I got Louis 7,900, Jason Day 7,800. Sorry, Alan, I got Rose at 7,700, and then Leishman at 7,400. I really do think he is the like most undervalued guy on DraftKings this week for the amount of birdies he makes, the way he plays on these type courses. And then Tier 4, 7,000 under, Kisner 7,000. Westwood 6,900, Dietrich 6,600, and Brandon Todd 6,400. And then let's go through my picks and let me know what you think. And then if you want to give some of yours, you can. If not, for those that don't know, if you join the IB All-Stars, Alan provides his picks along with the reasoning. Usually it's up, what, Wednesday, right?
Yeah, it's been getting later, but I'm definitely going to have to do it Wednesday night just because this is
early start, yeah.
Yeah.
So my picks to win, I've got Rahm at 10-1. I told you all the reasons. Bryson 18-1. Again, it just gets down to he's won there before. I think he's got a lot of talent, and I think that's pretty high odds for him. The rest of these guys are either ball strikers or scramblers. And I've got Adam Scott at 50-1, Patrick Reed at 28-1, Neiman at 55-1, Hideki at 60-1. Leishman at 100-1 and Todd at 150-1. I know you're not crazy about the Bryson pick. I mean, I think this, you know, this is again an Adam Scott course where I feel like if I don't pick him, he'll probably win. He's 50-1. I'm going to take a shot. I know you're probably not crazy about that. The top five plays, and again, look at these odds. You can get some great ones. I got Hatton at 5-1 to top five, Kisner at 14-1. And Horschel at 16-1. Top 10, I got Fleetwood at plus 350. Louis Oosthuizen at 4-1. And Lee Westwood, again, at 11-1. These odds on Westwood are crazy. And then my top 20 plays, again, I'm going to go with Kisner at plus 250. Westwood at 4-1. And then, again, it's hard to find guys in these odds. But I do like Dietrich and Cabrera Bella, both at 5-1. They're guys that, especially if it ends up being a birdie fest, I could see them being in the top 20, and you're getting 5-1 odds to where, I mean, you hit one of those and you're betting the same odds on, you know, all those top 20 players, you're going to win a little bit of money. You hit on two of them, you're doing okay. Any of those plays you particularly like or dislike?
No, because those odds are really good. My bookie's killing me. They're not giving as much value anymore on my top 20 props and stuff like that. It makes me mad. So I would definitely go off script and try FanDuel and DraftKings.
DraftKings is outrageous.
Yeah,
I mean, it's outrageous. Like, I cannot wait for it to be able to bet in Georgia because, I mean, again, I just want to, like, I mean, it's just crazy, some of these odds. I can't believe that you're getting, like, Carlos Ortiz 125-1, Shane Lowry 125-1, and it's the prop bets that are just nuts. I mean, for a guy like Lowry who has a history of top 10ing in majors and WGCs, he's plus 750 to top 10. I mean, that's just, to me, crazy odds. I mean, even Horschel at 6-1. So, you know, definitely look at those. Any chance that Homa has just figured it out? We didn't talk about him. He's 70-1 in this event.
Yeah, no, I like Max. And I think he's playing the best golf he's ever played right now, but he just won. So.
It's so hard to go back to back.
Yeah, we talked about that
numerous times.
I think the last time I saw that was Brendan Todd, actually.
I think he was. That was the last time a guy went back to back.
Yep. But I wouldn't take that chance this week. Nah, doesn't do it for me.
You got anything else you want to talk about, or do you want to spend a few seconds just talking about Tiger real quickly?
Before we get to Tiger, you might want to consider how that might affect some people closest to him.
Mm-hmm. That's like, a good point.
Justin Thomas is really close to him. There are a couple guys on tour, young guys, who look up to Tiger, friends with Tiger, and things like that. And they just came from an event that was basically Tiger's event. So some of them, their heads might not be in it, you know, is worth considering. Some people might think that's a stretch, but
no, I think that's a very fair thing to say. I mean, you could also turn that around for somebody like JT, who I think has so much talent, or maybe he wants to win it for Tiger.
Yeah.
Depending on the way he reacts to that, that could be either a positive or a negative, but it is something you should definitely consider because there is probably three or four guys in the field that are true friends. Jason Day is another one that is close to Tiger.
Yeah. So I would definitely consider that. I guess in closing, the only thing I want to say is this week there is no data, and everything we pretty much do is based off of data.
That's right. So, I love it. This is true gambling.
Yep. So definitely do what you do, bro. Do what you do. If you want to take a shot, by all means, take a shot. I ain't going to tell you putting $10 on my man Eric Van Rooyen at 200-1 is crazy because who knows? Maybe this is the perfect course for him.
I think it's going to be one of those weeks that from like 70-1 up, I'm going to be sprinkling $5 everywhere.
Yeah. Seriously. I'm going to probably have like 15 picks. So
That's what I'm saying. Like, why not? Like when you're getting these kind of odds, I mean, we didn't mention Abraham Answer. He's 80-1. I mean, Answer's the guy that's played well in WGCs. There's so many options. I do just real quick want to, you know, obviously send our thoughts and well wishes to Tiger. It does not sound great for his golfing career. And it's sad to say, but I mean, the reports are shattered a leg, shattered an ankle. Who knows about his back, which he just had surgery on. And I mean, even as one of his biggest fans, I couldn't believe he came back and won at Augusta. I couldn't believe he came back and won the Tour Championship after everything he'd been through. This truly could be the end of his competitive golf career. And at this point, obviously, goal number one is a big fan and somebody who is he's just given a lot of joy as a sports fan. I just hope he recovers, to where he can have a normal life and it's nothing too serious, which it seems like it is. But if you're talking about for his professional golfing career going forward, this could be a death blow. Now, this could also be, though, the Ben Hogan story, which for those that don't know, Ben Hogan was a very similar age, very similar part of his career, had done a bunch, had a similar, like, just awful wreck, was told he wouldn't play again when he came back and had an unbelievable 3-4 stretch before he retired. So, not saying it's not, because Tiger's proved us wrong, but it just it is sad and it's scary. I don't know about you. I had a lot of thoughts of Kobe when I saw that car like there, and there was a little bit of time that we didn't know for sure what kind of condition he was in because it looked awful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I get alerts like that when I'm in passing at work, the first thing I just hope for is that the person survived. You know, it's not even that it's Tiger, it's anybody, you know, but definitely.
I didn't even know that that's what they called that device, was the Jaws of Life.
Yeah, the Jaws of Life. Yeah. Which the report came out later said they didn't have to use it. But, I mean, looking at the pictures of the crash, I don't see
it. It was pretty bad. Yeah. I mean, you could see, like, the luggage and clothes and everything just scattered everywhere. It was crazy.
I had all kind of concerns because he looked like he was soft.
Dude, he looked fucked up, son.
Yeah, on the last time
he was on. So high. Whew.
And I worry that he has an addiction with these painkillers, because it's probably something that he's been taking routinely. You mix it with a little bit of alcohol, the time of day seems a little weird to be.
I will say, did you see the report that came out, though? He apparently was late to a golf event with Justin Herbert and Drew Brees.
Yeah.
And they believe that there is a chance that he was hauling ass. Because he was, like, legitimately running behind. I think he was, like, 15 minutes away from the course and needed to be there in, like, 5 minutes. And so, I mean, I do think, though, there's a good chance that it's going to come out potentially that it, you know, may have been drug-related. But I'm hopeful it's just a dumb decision where he was speeding.
They said there was no substances were involved is what the police had said. I think.
Well, they said they couldn't smell it. But, I mean, if he's taking painkillers, you know what I mean? They wouldn't know that unless they, you know, do a talk.
I've been guilty of taking a muscle relaxer once and getting behind the wheel. It was something that I didn't fully understand at the time when I was way younger. So
what have we all learned, right? That I think most accidents happen within like 5 miles of your house. I mean, it's dangerous to drive a car.
Yeah, I'm just happy he's alive. And at this point, I'm more worried about the quality of life than I am him turning back to the game. If he
Especially the battle he's been through recently, right, just to get back to where he can do stuff.
Yeah, if he can, that's fine. If not, you know, just want to make sure, you know, he has a decent quality of life. And, it's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes we forget that, you know, everybody, like, life is fragile, man. It's really fragile, and it's unfortunate that a lot of times we don't really put that into perspective until a tragedy happens. Yep. And I'm grateful that we're not sitting here eulogizing Tiger.
Yep. I just couldn't imagine a year after Kobe. Almost a year today. It would be unbelievable. Like, it really would.
And it's Black History Month. I'd have been too high. God got to do that over. We can't
leave him. Exactly.
You took Rush Limbaugh. This is not a fair trade.
That's right.
Yeah, and if anybody doesn't know, I used to do stand-up before COVID came, so I'm sorry. I got to get these jokes off somehow.
Oh, that's good. I'm sorry. That's funny. It was just like all 2020, the people that kept saying, if you take Betty White 2020, you know, you've gone too far. So.
Yeah, man.
I hope that this is a big week for us. I hope for those that listening, it's a big week for you. And again, take your shots. I mean, this is one of the few weeks that, I mean, obviously any week you can take your shots, but there's not really a dumb pick this week because nobody really knows from a data sense what is going to happen. So if you have a feeling, a gut, or, you know, a trend or whatever that you want to follow, or if you just like an odd on a guy, you know, in the words of Kobe Bryant, shooters got to shoot. So, you know, take your shot. But Alan, I enjoyed it. And you want to plug anything real quick before we get out of here?
We're going to continue to do the Mod Pod. We're trying to get a fair and balanced thing where we've kind of been more talking about Trump, which it was dominating the news. But I'm trying to wing us back to like current events and then just focus.
Not to feel bad. He's done that to 4 major news networks.
To kind of focus more on like just, you know, COVID and
actual politics. The country needs to start talking about no matter what side you're on.
Also, the NBA podcast will be back this week. And then we will also hopefully. Looking to doing a March Madness podcast, which, I mean, you and I could do that, but I also wanted to drag drag Corey into it because
I would love
Corey hates all the teams that I love, so you'll get a you'll get a kick out of our arguments because we literally don't agree on anything. I think the only thing we would agree on is that Gonzaga is the team to beat this year.
I'll be Tony Reale then on the podcast.
After that, I mean, we literally don't agree. It's Coke and
Pepsi. Ring the bell and let you two guys go. That I would enjoy. So that sounds like a plan. But for Keith Fleming and for Alan, this has been another edition of the Backdoor Cover covering the WGC event, not this year in Mexico, but at Concession Country Club in Florida. And we'll see you guys soon.
All right.